One of the results of the COVID pandemic economic crisis is that more people and companies are comfortable working remotely because, well, they had to. Except for essential services like law enforcement, healthcare, and supermarkets, almost everybody else worked remotely. Even companies whose executives had previously insisted that remote would not work for their organization. I know because I worked for some of them. Surprise, necessity really is the mother of invention. One of the other results of the COVID shutdown as a result of people working remotely was that energy use plummeted. Nobody was commuting. Nobody was flying anywhere. Thousands of flights were canceled. There was no rush hour traffic. And the skies were remarkably clear. Now, as we all find our way through this middle ground of work schedules, part remote, part coming to the office, called hybrid work, what will that mean for energy and for our air and water? Today, we're going to find out from an expert at one of the most well-reputed firms in the world. Welcome to the new Electric Ladies podcast, formerly known as Green Connections Radio. We bring you insights and tips from remarkably innovative women about corporate responsibility, energy, and sustainability-related issues. I'm your host, Joan Michelson. We talk about innovation, leadership, technologies, and careers, always bringing a new perspective. Find us anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, on our brand new website, electricladiespodcast.com, and through my Forbes blog as well. And please pass it on to your friends. If you are struggling with your own career, especially in this craziness, please reach out to me on Twitter and let me know. We can help you, no matter what industry you are in. So during the COVID crisis, energy use plummeted by 14% in New York City, for example, about the same in Wisconsin and Michigan, and Southern California was down about 18%. Those of us seeking to combat climate change and embrace the idea of fewer people driving and flying places when they can be just as productive, working remotely and meeting by video, were thrilled. We loved the cleaner air, less traffic, and gas being cheaper. But what happens now? Now that many of us will be returning to offices part-time and traveling a lot less for work, how is this going to go? What's the impact on energy and what's the impact on our environment? I'd like you to meet Catherine Pavlovsky, also known as Katie, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly. She's a principal at the renowned management consulting firm Deloitte, where she worked almost her entire career over 21 years. Currently, she is principal in Deloitte's Risk and Financial Advisory. Katie serves as the leader of the Business Insurance Claims Consulting in the Energy Resources and Industrials Industry Practice. Before taking on these roles, Katie's work at Deloitte also included leading the firm's Environmental and Sustainability Consulting Group and having leadership roles in oil and gas, power, and utilities. So you can see why I really wanted you to meet her and have this conversation with her. Full disclosure, I worked at Deloitte in the past as well for several years. Katie earned her bachelor's degree in economics at the University of Texas at Austin and her MBA at Rice. Welcome to Electric Ladies, Katie, and thank you for joining us. I hope I didn't botch your name too badly. I'm sorry.
You did very well, and I really appreciate the opportunity, Joan, to participate in your program today. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. So your experience in risk, energy, and sustainability is so interesting to me, and as I said, why I really wanted to talk to you. Even though offices and schools were nearly empty, they were still using electricity, energy, and water, though at obviously dramatically lower levels. And they had to keep air conditioning and heating systems going and a lot of lighting systems going, for example. A lot of people don't realize that, but they did. Now many executives, including a few of your Deloitte colleagues, by the way, are telling me that they will not have anywhere near the real estate footprint they had for their organizations before. That means fewer commercial buildings using less energy, electricity, and water. But it's already happening a certain amount. It's going to happen more in a few months. So take us into the room with your clients. What are the issues that they're raising to you as they navigate this new hybrid work environment?
Yeah, so a couple of things. What is really interesting, and I've worked in the world of environmental sustainability, corporate responsibility for almost my entire career. I live in Houston. I've spent a significant amount of time in the energy and the oil and gas sector. And what's really interesting to me is what was realized over the course of the last 18 months or so. And so if you look at on a global basis, carbon emissions, they declined 6.2% in 2020. And so this was the largest decline that we've seen in 75 years. And what's interesting is it's going to be that rate of decline that is needed to achieve some of the commitments that we are making across the globe as it relates to global emission reductions and in, you know, by the timeline of 2050. And so it's really interesting to see what it required in the last 18 months to actually hit that and what it means going forward. What is intriguing is that the dialogue around environmental, social, governance, climate did not slow in the sector, in part because I think it was obvious, right? The evidence of what actually can be realized when we have our activities reduced, right? Whether it's on the commercial level, whether it's on the personal level, what have you. You know, as we look ahead, right? The companies that I work with in the sector are very focused, right? That the attention is continuing as it relates to environmental, social, and governance. So they are looking at that. I think what they're also very much focused on is just trying to get an understanding of what is the new normal, right? And so, as you mentioned, there was a dramatic drop in gasoline, commuting ground to a halt, right, amidst the lockdowns. We are seeing driving levels start to uptick, and we're also seeing a lot of passenger travel, right, increase. I think there was a lot of news around the July 4th holiday, right, as it relates to how significantly that grew and are we returning to new levels. But regardless, they're still down pre-pandemic. And so the question is, what is it going to be going forward? And then there's the opportunity to look at, you know, return to work. And we look at it in a couple of different aspects. It's what does it mean in terms of market demand? What does it mean in terms of workforce? What does it mean in terms of workplace? And what does it mean in terms of workers? And then overall, the stakeholder community and environment. And so quite honestly, what I'm experiencing and what I'm seeing is a look at the culmination of all of these factors. So continuing pressure around environmental, social, and governance types of issues, climate, understanding what we were able to achieve. Is there some way to strive towards those targets as we balance return to work? What does that mean in terms of who's physically present in the office, in the field versus working remotely? Are you just displacing the consumption, right? Or are you actually reducing it? What does that mean? What does it mean as it relates to taking this opportunity to rethink talent models, right, and gain new talent through this opportunity? And then what does it mean even in terms of thinking about, you know, topics that fit within the broader environmental, social, and governance umbrella, whether it's diversity, equity, and inclusion, or whether it's security overall? And so what I would say is a very complex array of topics that the companies that we work with are entertaining. And look, what they're very focused on is how do I do this in a way that is strategic and is sustaining, recognizing that the cost models that I operated under the past aren't going to carry me forward into the future. And I think the nice thing is that the timing of all of this intersects with significant advancement in both information technology as well as operational technologies.
Yeah, that's a really good summary. And I wanted to ask you about ESG as more in depth in a moment, but I hear you because it really is multidimensional, right? But what I'm also hearing you say, which is really interesting, is that especially the oil and gas and power sectors got a dry run forced upon them of where they really need to go to meet, say, you know, the Paris Accord requirements, right? So they didn't plan on it, but now they know what's possible. But, you know, when it comes to work for, I mean, you can't work remotely on an oil rig and you can't work remotely in a power plant, but you can, as you say, there's automation. There's now new technologies that can be integrated into that. And I want to talk about that a little bit as well. But I'm so glad that they're thinking of this on a holistic level and not just reacting or expecting everything to go back to normal. So they realize that not only are people not going to return to work the way they were, I don't really see it as displacing it because, you know, being remote work, just using power at home instead of in the office, because the order of magnitude is just way higher in the office, right? But also that they may not even need those buildings anymore and that there's a different way to address the problem, right? So where do they see this new normal in, say, 12 months or 2 years? I mean, how are they, you said they're thinking about what is the new normal and what does return to normal mean, to return to work mean? What's their timeline that they're looking at? I mean, because the oil and gas sector and the utility sector has a very long time frame. Capital investments need to be made. You know, they take years and years to, you know, put in place. The utility sector is already going through massive changes and yet can't afford to lose power to anybody, your home state notwithstanding. That's a whole nother topic. So what's their time frame in thinking about this new normal for now?
Well, so I think it depends on, you know, the particular area or scope, right, that we were talking about. What I would say is it relates to the broader ESG topic, the environmental social governance topic, there's a recognition that there's a journey. So we did see that the industry accelerated its energy transition. And many of the companies, you know, during the height of the pandemic were announcing their zero goals. You know, certain of the super majors like BP and Shell actually hardened their goals and announced production cuts going forward over the next decade through automation and looking for opportunities to do this. And in the pandemic was certainly an accelerator for digital. We saw that these organizations really sought out opportunities, you know, to drive efficiency, right? And that there was a real synergy between those efficiencies and in environmental, social, and governance. Is some of this lower hanging fruit has been achieved, right? Or at least as they're looking at their roadmaps, you know, in the short term, I think there's a recognition of, look, we actually moved pretty quickly, faster than we anticipated. And we're now getting to a place in the journey where it's getting harder. And there are infrastructure requirements, right, outside of our four walls. So it really becomes a more of an ecosystem discussion. And so what we're observing is what I would call, you know, cuts. It's it relates to the things that they can manage within their four walls and certainly a shorter time there, right, over the next couple of the years, and then recognizing to really make the big movement, right? It's outside the four walls and their components as it relates to the maturity of the technologies and the solutions that I think are going to influence what that time looks like. What they also recognize is they can be a really significant part of the solution. And so I think the strategy is around where can we actually move the needle as it relates to the things that we as an energy industry can contribute, whether it's our technological solutions, whether it's the talent that we bring to the market. We actually have a real role in shaping this, you know, across industries and sectors globally.
Well, you do, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because I read that in Fast Company that many building leases have clauses in them that stipulate that the HVAC systems have to run no matter what the occupancy levels. And so, and that some executives and organizations are trying to negotiate their way out of that. And what came to my mind was these new technologies and new systems that really kind of make those clauses obsolete, because those new technologies are designed to do the opposite, to manage the electricity and the energy and the water usage in these buildings or in any facility so that you can maintain the building and the systems running properly, because you can't just turn everything off, while also using less when you don't need so much, right? So that's really interesting. I also heard David Turk before at a hearing in Congress before he was head of the International Energy Agency say that the pandemic was the biggest hit to the energy sector since World War II. And you kind of alluded to that when you said it was largest decline in 75 years. So it sounds like there are lessons that they're absorbing, but that coupled with, you mentioned the ESG investors, you've got the climate activists, you know, at Exxon who just pushed for more climate-related people on the board and a faster, more aggressive pivot to clean energy. So you're getting it from all sides, right? You're getting the push from the investors and you're getting, frankly, a push from the economy. And the technologies kind of are there, so they don't really have that as an excuse. Where do they see their role? I mean, are they being pushed by their employees also on these issues? Talk about some of the other stakeholders in this ESG picture.
Yeah, so I think stakeholders as it relates to their employees and the talent model is an interesting thing to discuss. And so what we would say is that the COVID situation, the pandemic, changed the narrative as it relates to employment. And so there has been, you know, as a sector, oil and gas has been very cyclical. It's had a history of being very cyclical. This really motivated, and Deloitte actually calls it the Great Compression, but COVID-19 and what we coined as the Great Compression actually accentuated some of these hiring challenges and then accelerated, I think, the focus on the future of energy and, you know, where they are going to drive, not only from a product standpoint, right, but from a solution, from a partnership standpoint, from an ecosystem standpoint. You know, just to keep on the talent theme for a moment, and then I can move to some of the others. It is interesting because working from home opened the door for some new opportunities for talent. And I would say there's a recruiting dimension to this, and there's a retention dimension to this. I'll handle them in that narrative. But, you know, the industry was dealing with a looming workforce shortage challenge, right? Which is the anticipated retirements on the horizon were really significant. And at the same time, it was an industry, right, that was really looking for ways to recruit the millennials into the industry. And so, you know, I think what automation did to change the nature of the opportunities within the industry and to recruit from new markets had a really interesting impact. And so what we're seeing is that markets in Los Angeles and Chicago and in Philadelphia opened up through the remote work, through the operations or the automation, through the opportunities to drive through analytics and digital. And so you lost the pressure, right, in what had traditionally been cities that had really sourced the talent for oil, gas, and in energy overall. I touched on this with analytics, but the pandemic really accelerated this need for IT, you know, advanced skills around that.
I think it also probably, yeah, just to interject for a second, it probably also, to be frank, changed the branding because now it's not just about oil and gas. It's about energy that powers our economy writ large and using technological skills to do it, not having to hang out on an oil rig.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so it's interesting because if you look at the challenges ahead of the industry and then, you know, ESG and what has been forced through the pandemic, it actually opens up, I think, the option to really drive more diversity, you know, and attract more women to the workforce as well as diversity overall. And so, you know, it's the rapidly accelerating digital transformation, it's the evolving ESG. I think it's creating the need to train, right, and to move towards these new solutions. And so what we do see is a recognition of that and a targeting. And so it's the combination of the nature of the work and the reskilling, as well as the hybrid model and what they open up for women in terms of creating more flexibility. And look, it had been evolving for a while where there was talent and opportunities in the cybersecurity world, in the accounting world, in the finance world, you know, areas that didn't necessarily require the physical presence in the field. But I think the industry had been struggling to get that kind of talent into the industry from a diversity standpoint. And in, you know, what the pandemic has created is, I think, the opportunity to go and chase. And, you know, look, the pandemic was especially hurt on women. We saw that the fallout as it relates to taking care of the needs at home was largely borne by women. And as we've got to return to work in these hybrid models, I think there are opportunities to leverage the technology for flexible working arrangements, those sorts of things. And with that, right, what we're also seeing is some movement towards off balance sheet, you know, types of models in terms of employment and where the talent is coming from. And all of those things create a flexibility, right, that allow for movement towards these newer solutions, right, as it relates to energy and how it's acquired, how it's distributed, how it's consumed. What I think will be an interesting dynamic is then what does the interest, you know, there's an opportunity to recruit, but then how does the industry retain? And so if you think about what it's known for in terms of a culture of innovation and ingenuity, right? The technology that it's born, the deep engineering technical skill set that's resided there, the R&D, I think that that combination of capabilities is going to become very visible, right, to other industries and sectors who can benefit from the expertise, the access to, you know, international markets, the transition overall. And so I think what, you know, the industry is going to need to work through is as the talent within the industry becomes more visible, right, is they're driving solutions associated with the energy transition across in other industries and sectors. How do they really retain it here?
Well, and one of the factors in that is going to be helping the professional development of those people, which includes, because one of the challenges, I mean, I know I go to energy conferences all the time, you know, pre-COVID, and I'm sure we will again. And most of the time you can throw a bowling ball through the damn place and not hit a woman or somebody of color. And I think part of that is the women who are in the space are more in the background, or they're not really given the opportunities or thought of for the opportunities. I mean, that's frankly why I focus on women on my show, because I'm tired of women not getting a bleeping microphone, one literally and figuratively, when there's all this amazing talent. And part of it is, you know, the women don't put themselves out there for it, but part of it is the companies don't send them out, they don't promote them, they don't give them those skills to make them feel more comfortable. And so I think it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing in terms of that's going to help and show the role models like yourself and other women that I know who are really cool in utilities and oil and gas and in every aspect of the energy sector, who are really interesting people doing interesting things, bringing skills from different areas. I mean, you're not an engineer or a physicist. I'm not an engineer or a physicist. The more women see the opportunities to be innovative and to be having a say in what the energy of the future really looks like and how we do power our economies, I think that will be more appealing. The other thing related to that I want to ask you is a lot of talent is pushing on the environment. And so when it comes to particularly oil and gas and the power sector, it's perceived still as dirty industries, right? And so you're going to have a lot of, in order to get some of this new talent, fresh, new, innovative talent, they're going to say, well, fine, but what are you doing to reduce your carbon footprint? So are you hearing from your clients and in the sector that there's that push already? And how is that playing out?
Yeah, no, there's absolutely that push, right? And the millennials in particular led that push. And I think the exciting thing is, you know, the opportunity within the industry and to be a part of the solution. And so I really see a pivoting, right, to recognizing the opportunities and the challenges they had and to use that as a recruiting mechanism into the industry. So it's, look, and it's appreciated on the investor side as well. We had talked about the investors and the stakeholders. And so I think there's a recognition of this is where all of our stakeholders want us to go. It's accelerating the path. I think looking for ways to get more consistent in terms of measurements, you know, results, again, recognizing some of the infrastructure types of investments that are needed to make this really move forward in the way that it needs to or things that are going to help as it relates to getting everybody on the same page and working together, right, across the industry, across the sector, and then, you know, in other industry sectors, you know, technology, consumer, et cetera.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the big bugaboos, especially with these sectors, is transparency. I mean, this is, to be blunt, not the most transparent industry in the place of the planet, right? So, and the Exxon investor activism is one sign of that. But also, you know, to recruit, and with the SEC efforts to standardize reporting and SASB and GRI forming VRF or whatever it's called, I get lost in the alphabet soup. But these standards are being combined to a certain degree, right? So there aren't so many. And there's requirements. The EU has requirements. So there has to be more reporting, including of the stuff that they might not want to report. You know, it might not make them look great to be recruiting the newest class of graduates in, you know, engineering from MIT or whatever, or even mid-career women who say, well, you know, I want to make a difference and I want to be part of the energy revolution, right? So that's, that transparency has to be there. Are you hearing pushback from your clients on the transparency issue?
It's actually the other direction. There is a welcoming and a reception to receiving the additional guidance, right, to drive the consistency in the reporting. And so I see it more going in the direction of this world has been a voluntary reporting world, you know, largely to this point, with some of the exceptions that you cited with respect to the European Union. You were absolutely right that some of the US agencies and administrations looking at this as well, and I think trying to streamline so that we are driving that consistency. But from my experience, the conversations have largely been in the form of, we would welcome that. It would help us to navigate it right, for all of us to be talking in a way that is, you know, comparable versus, you know, just, I think, an appreciation for the scope of environmental, social, and governance being very different across organizations, the way that they're tracking, measuring, and reporting. And so I see a welcome to having that as a guide and a roadmap and, you know, something that is viewed as having a positive overall on the industry and the sector, as well as across industries and sectors.
Well, it does level the playing field, and they are looking at adaptations for industries, because oil and gas is different than clothing and apparel, right? Is different than, you know, furniture, is different than, you know, I mean, every industry has its, or food, you know, whatever. Every industry has a different, there's certain things that will be consistent, but there are nuances to each industry, right? So I could talk to you about these issues for like hours, but in the interest of time, I've got one other quick question, and then I'd like to get some career advice for my listeners as well. And that is, let's look at the other side. What's the impact on the environment that you see of, as I said in the introduction, we had 10 to 18% decrease in energy use that resulted in cleaner air and water, et cetera. So what do you see as the impact on the environment of the hybrid work configuration?
Look, if it continues in the way that some of it is currently being constructed, where you don't have the daily commutes at the rigor that it was, or that there is a, you know, a recognition for, you know, the appreciation of what we're using Zoom now, right? What this can facilitate, look, as even within, you know, a management consulting organization, right? We're looking at those sorts of opportunities and how do we sustain some of the progress that we've made, right? So that's certainly an impact that can continue at some level. What is interesting, and this is my training and background as it relates to environmental and economics and in the trade-off discussion, right, is in the absence of this, you know, what are some of the other things that have ticked up? And what does it mean as it relates to our ability to, I think, refine the way that we recycle? It's just a very clear, concrete example is all of the increased shipping, right, that has happened is we've been buying remotely versus going to the grocery stores. And so that's had impact, right? And our infrastructure to handle recyclables, right, is something that really needs to be focused on and has an impact as it relates to waste. And again, that's something that requires infrastructure development, and it goes beyond an organization's four walls in terms of having, you know, it goes beyond the collection, right? It goes to making sure that the markets are there to use the recyclable materials, right? And that you've got the transportation infrastructure, that, you know, the regulatory infrastructure supports it, that you've got some of the financial incentives and mechanisms. And then look, there are trade-offs as it relates to, you know, environmental contamination associated with all of these mechanisms, right? And so some of the things that we need to work through is that for all of the good, right, that the renewables infrastructure brings, that there are also long-term liability types of implications that need to be managed, considered, and, you know, water usage, right, can vary if you're thinking about the conservation end. So the overall impact of the environment, you know, I would suggest it starts in the way that, you know, needs to be addressed in the way that I started, right, which is recognizing the scope in full, right, looking at this holistically, making sure that they're not unintended consequences as we're working through on addressing the return to work, the overall environmental, social, and governance types of agenda. What we're trying to do as it relates to our people and retention, and making sure that, you know, we're not looking at the opportunities in terms of isolated initiatives, but looking at them broadly and evaluating both the risk and the opportunity in getting to the best decisions.
No, that makes a lot of sense. There always are these pesky unintended consequences, aren't there? Just to put a pin in the recycling issue, I've covered this a lot, and actually I have two guests coming up on the recycling issue of who are leaders in the recycling department and tackling this, including with the ERPs, which is a big legislation to help do what you're talking about, basically in the short form, is address the new infrastructure that's needed to really take that on and take the pressure off the MRFs and others. So that's a longer conversation for another time. In closing, we like to give career advice to mid-career women. So figure women who have been in the workforce for like 15 years, they have an education, they know what they're good at, they know what they like, but they want to make a difference. They want to use their skills, their education, their experience to make a difference. They're ambitious, they want to make money, they want to get ahead, and so they're not willing to trade off their ambition. But what would you suggest to them to help them make a difference and excel?
You know, one of the things that I think is interesting, in especially in light of the recent environment, is just really thinking back across the network and reflecting on the network. And what I am finding is that the pandemic has motivated women to appreciate their experiences, the contributions that they can make going forward, and whether they are currently in the best position to be driving forward with those. And so as these ideas are spinning up and are getting shared through our social media networks and other, right, I think there's a real interest. It's the connectivity, right? And a real interest in exploring where can you take it. I'm aware of these networks, right, even within energy and on the topics of environmental, social, and governance, and what is the role that women can play in particular in moving forward that agenda and driving earlier results just based on the networks that they have with each other. So, you know, I think it's a combination, Joan, of what inspires you, what you love to do, coupling that with your experiences and then your relationship network to think about how can I do things differently, right? And I do think what the pandemic has done in terms of appreciating the ability to work across networks, you know, across geographies, across the miles, and actually accelerate the path is really intriguing. I've been in a couple of women's forums and events in the course of this year, and I think the number of women that are starting up their own businesses is really impressive, right? And what I would say is the business doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, a sacrifice as it relates to the things that you've built. Just as I mentioned in the earlier part of our discussion, right? The ecosystem is evolving. And so the opportunity can be that as remote work happens, right? Or as companies are exploring off-balance sheet models for how they pull through their talent, or explore gig models or whatever it is, it's actually really opening up the door to think about your networks, your contributions, who you know, and how you can contribute to that new environment. So new business models, right, I think, are the opportunity out there. And so I think if you're combining those things, there will be some clarity, right? But everybody is focused on the return on their time. I think appreciating some of the benefits that came with the pandemic as it relates to looking at not only your aspirations personally, but professionally, and looking at it holistically in terms of how you can really pivot. And I think close out our careers in a way that have high impact and purpose, but meet the things that we're looking for without having the constraints that were there before.
That's great. No, I appreciate that. In closing, I'll tell you a little snippet, which I can share with you as well offline. And that is, we did a survey last year of women achievers I did it through my network, so there's a certain level of bias there, but we distributed it over social media, and then organizations we're affiliated with distributed it. So we did get a little outside the bubble, if you will. But what was interesting to me was that the research showed that women want four things. They want status, which is considered, yes, it's money, but it's also a title and recognition of the accomplishments and the abilities. Power, which is really influence, the ability to have an influence and make a difference. And curiosity, which I love, that goes to the innovation and ingenuity thing, and idealism. And it was the first time, I used a well-established 30-year-old research company, and this was the first time they'd ever found idealism in the profile. And I think it says a lot about, you know, about women in mid-career in the, you know, especially in sort of this larger ecosystem, is that they want to make a difference and they want all four of those things together. So thank you so much, Katie. I really appreciate your time. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
Look, I think it's an exciting time, and looking at it, where things are going and the intersections of, look, I'm very passionate, right, towards this movement around environmental, social, and governance. And I think the recognition of the progress we can make and the fact that the roadmaps are starting to shape, I think, is a great opportunity across the board. I think we've got a lot to be excited about as it relates to where the workforce is going and the opportunities that can be presented and how we can drive diversity through it. And so it's a time of change, I think, that is unlike any that I've experienced in my career to this point, and probably more so than, you know, I'll experience forward. And so I appreciate, you know, what you're doing, right, to draw more visibility to the opportunities out there and, you know, across the board. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you so much, Katie. I totally agree with you. So thank you so much for joining us today on Electric Ladies Podcast, Katie Pavlovsky of Deloitte. So are you returning to the office? How do you feel about that? Tell us on Twitter at Joan Michelson and any questions you may have for Katie or me. And we will have a drawing of all the responses, and the winner will get a complimentary 30-minute coaching session with yours truly. And please subscribe to our mailing list to stay abreast of our talented, amazing guests like Katie, our blogs, and career advice. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.